live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Because just when you thought that the Red Hot Spurs and the New Look Raptors were going to rip some much needed and deserved national run, the Rockets and the Warriors ripped it right from them. More accurately, James Harden ripped it right from them. The Beard, 44, 10, and 15. Let me repeat that. 44 points, 10 rebounds, 15 assists. There have been just 11 40, 10, and 15 games in NBA history. Harden already has two of them. He nearly had a third one Monday night. I'm talking about a guy playing without two starters on the road. James Harden single-handedly dragged his team back from 20 down to beat the three-time world champs 135-134 in OT. Golden State had 70 at halftime. Houston was getting run out of the building. They had no shot in that game, except they had James Harden. And if we're being honest, he didn't just beat the champs, he beat the refs as well. Because that crew threw down one of the all-time worst calls in NBA history with less than a minute to go in overtime.
He saved that ball. Out. Out.
Absolutely he's out.
Out.
Wow.
How in the world do you miss that?
How do you miss that?
And Harden is there going, what are you doing?
TNT on the call. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you know what I'm saying. If you've already seen the video, you know what I'm saying. If you watched the game last night, you get this. KD goes out of bounds to save the ball. He went to save the ball, but he did step out of bounds to save the ball. And I'm not talking about just kind of graze the line, not barely over the line, not it could go either way with that call, but I'm talking about both feet over the yellow paint. That kind of call. If that were the NFL, he would have gotten both feet down and demonstrated possession before he saved the ball and got it back in bounds. That's what I'm talking about. In fact, his feet touch down four times in the yellow paint and a knee hits the floor, but the refs didn't call it. The refs didn't see it. And then Curry hits a jumper and takes the lead. Chris Paul, for one, had thoughts. He tweeted, quote, "So, we doing the Bird Box Challenge during NBA games now, huh?" Everybody knew Kevin Durant was out. Even Kevin Durant knew that Kevin Durant was out of bounds because he said after the game, he could believe the refs would blow a call like that. Quote, "I could believe it because the refs were missing a lot tonight." So what'd that mean? That meant that Harden had to work that much harder. And he did. He had 10 threes, but none bigger than this one. Down two, 5.5 seconds left in OT, the Rockets inbounding.
Gerald Green to inbound, Harden trying to get three, down to two, it's a three, good, good, he got it, James Harden a flamethrower, incredible shot.
And that's just stupid. That is the height of stupidity. Two guys on him, and not just two guys, a defensive player of the year in Draymond Green, a guy who can lock just about anybody up whenever he wants. Klay Thompson, a great defensive player, and James Harden still made that shot. Run that back for me one more time.
Gerald Green to inbound. Harden trying to get three, down to two, it's a three.
Still stupid. How many shots in your life have you seen that are better than that? I mean, honestly, how many? A handful, maybe. But yeah, go ahead. Keep telling me how boring James Harden is. Keep telling me how James Harden is the guy who's ruining basketball. Keep telling me how bad this guy is for the sport and that he should not be considered for the MVP this year. Not only should the guy be considered for the MVP this year, he pretty much won the MVP last night. Remember that phrase, Heisman moment? Remember when that phrase was being beaten into the ground? Yeah, well, last night was Harden's Heisman moment. It was his Heisman moment, his MVP moment, hell, his Maxwell Award moment. When that final shot went down, I would have given that guy the Hart Memorial Trophy, the Lady Bing, the Vezina as well. That was his fifth straight 40-point game, his third 40-point triple-double of the season, and he's still averaging more than 40 per game over the past 11. But some of you don't want to hear it. Some of you don't like it. Some of you think the guy cheats. that he cheats. He's not cheating. He's a cheat code. There's a difference because James Harden is doing things that we have never seen before. But don't take my word for it. Who am I? You know, some smack-talking middle-aged man. Don't take my word for it. Ask Dwanye. Dwanye Wade tweeted, and I quote, "Sheesh, James Harden is on one." Marcus Morris tweeted, quote, "Sheesh, kid." I mean, sheesh is right. There's nothing else you can say at this point, right? This guy is on one. Check him after the game, in the tunnel, walking back to the locker room.
Yeah, big time, man. Shout out to CP3 and Aaron Gordon, man. We jump back with a big time win. House, Austin, Clint play well.
Right.
It's the entire team, man. That's what it's about. Team effort. We got to keep going, man. Keep going. We're finally getting our rhythm. We're slamming.
Sheesh. You check that out? You hear that? Shout out to CP3 and Eric Gordon. We need y'all back. Again, that's right. He did all of that without Chris Paul, without Eric Gordon. Down two starters, Harden pulled the Rockets all the way back from 20 down on the road to beat the three-time champs. And you can't oversell that. You can't say that enough. How does that feel? What do you think this guy's confidence level is right about now?
How can you describe your confidence level right now?
To the roof.
You catch that? Not even the answer. That little I mean, even he has to laugh. Even he's got kind of chuckle about that. That's the chuckle of y'all can't catch me now. Yeah, nice try. I'm going to keep on dropping 40 at will on everybody in everybody else's house. What I'm saying is this. The level this guy's playing at right now is unreal. Some of you want to ignore it. Some of you want to dismiss it. Some of you want to crack on it. And you couldn't be more wrong. That whole thing about you're entitled to your opinion. Yeah, you are entitled to your opinion no matter how wrong that opinion is right about now. I'm not saying you've got to love this guy, but you better not disrespect him or his game because what the guy is doing now is special. If you want to ignore it or crack on it, you're not protecting the game that you allegedly love. You're exposing yourself as an idiot. I mean, sheesh. Of course, I'm speaking of Carson Palmer. Carson, good to have you back. How are you?
Great, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you, bud. All right, so tell me about this first. You and I spoke back in September just as the NFL season was starting, and it was going to be your first year of retirement. What was the first season like for you away from the game?
You know, it was great. I had a blast. I really didn't miss the game like I anticipated missing it. I had a great time being a fan and watching my former teammates, my former teams, and I was really anticipating kind of a little bit of a struggle, especially early on. But the longer the season went on, and the more times I saw these quarterbacks getting smacked around, the more I enjoyed being a retired quarterback.
Carson Palmer joining us. That's funny, but I understand what you're saying. Talking about quarterbacks getting smacked around, I got to say, Carson, this is a huge Lamar Jackson house, and the team is completely different with him at quarterback. That said, he is running the football quite a bit. He's taken a lot of hits. It worked this season, but is that kind of thing sustainable long term?
I don't think so. I think they have a lot of issues going forward because they're in a situation with Flacco and his contract, and you can't let Flacco sit on the sideline taking up 14 or 15% of your salary cap. But you, if you let him go or move on from him, you're fully committing to Lamar. And like you said, at 205, 210 pounds, I love watching him play, but I hate seeing all the hits he takes. I mean, to rush the ball as many times as he's running these quarterback design runs or taking off on a pass play after he goes through his progressions, it's just tough to do 16 weeks in and out, especially when he gets to year 2, 3, and 4 and he's not 23 years old anymore. At that point, you're going to see him miss a game here or two games there, a three-game stretch. And when that's your starting quarterback and you're so used to a guy like Joe Flacco who just played year in, year out, week in, week out, that's tough to overcome, especially from the quarterback position.
Carson Palmer joining us. You know, you've got all the young quarterbacks. And then at the other end of the spectrum, Carson, you were on with Boomer and Geo this morning, and you were talking about Eli Manning and said that when a quarterback gets to be 35 or 36, you get to a point where things do not work the way they used to. So let me ask you this. Is it a matter of not putting in the prep or the work, or is it a matter of your body just not responding?
Oh, I think in Eli's in Eli's case, it's not. It has nothing to do with the amount of prep and work. That guy works his butt off and prepares and trains. But at some point, you lose a little bit. You lose a little bit of velocity. You lose a little bit of arm speed. You lose a little bit of zip. You lose a little bit of the ability to transfer your weight into throws from your right foot onto your left foot. I mean, you just slowly, like in anything, the older you get, you know, the more speed and explosiveness that, you know, it just goes away. And there's nothing you can do to train for it or regain it. You just slowly, you slowly lose it. And we had talked a little bit about Phillip Rivers, and Phillip Rivers has never beat anybody with arm strength. So as his arms gotten a little bit weaker over the years, he was always beating people with anticipation and timing. And I think he can continuously play the next 2 or 3 years maybe just because he's not going to rely on arm strength. Where Eli's got a strong arm. He's beat people and zip, you know, putting balls in certain holes and putting velocity on balls where defenders couldn't get to. But as those things start to slip and you lose those things, you can't regain them.
Carson Palmer joining us. And then, Carson, you look at Tom Brady at 41, Drew Brees at 40. Have you seen slippage in either one of those guys, the kind of slippage you're talking about?
Yeah, a little bit in both of them. You know, Brady's going on 41, 42 years old, whatever it is. You can see there's a little bit of loss in velocity, but the knowledge and the experience that both those guys have gained over the years, they're playing a game that you know, they're seeing things unfold before they actually unfold. They've seen the same blitzes, the same pressures, the same red zone defenses over and over and over again. So you have seen a little bit, you've seen a little deterioration in their skills. But again, those guys, a lot like Phillip, they're beating people with anticipation and putting the ball in the hole before a defender's ready for it or before a receiver's even breaking to that point where that ball is going to be. Those guys are playing the game a little bit faster than everybody around them, and they're getting away with it, even though their arm or athletic ability has deteriorated a little bit. But they're playing and beating people with anticipation.
Carson Palmer was the first pick overall. He joins us. Now, you're working with the FedEx Air and Ground NFL program, and the nominees for both awards are being announced today. For the Air Award, it's Drew Brees, Patrick Mahomes, and Phillip Rivers. Carson, who gets your vote in that category?
So I actually just voted. I voted for Patrick Mahomes. I really wanted my buddy Drew to win and would really love to see Phillip win. But when he went out and threw for 50 touchdowns this year, that sealed the deal for me. For the FedEx Ground Player of the Year, I voted for Ezekiel Elliott. He led the league in rushing again. He's an absolute stud. His numbers speak for themselves. So those two guys got my votes. You can easily log on and vote on the Twitter NFL page. It's very easy. It's very simple. You can also vote on NFL.com/FedEx. FedEx is donating $20,000 to the air winner and the ground winner, and that money goes to our USO Pathfinder program, which helps our retired service men and women. It helps them move on to the next phase of their life and transition into civilian life.
You handled that like a boss. Carson Palmer, my guest. One last thought. So you mentioned the nominees also for the Ground Award. When you've got Ezekiel Elliott and Saquon Barkley and Todd Gurley, as you point out, you got some studs right here. The thinking has long been that you can't really exercise a first-round pick on a running back, yet all three of those guys were. So where do you come out? I mean, does that tell us you can use a pick on a running back if it's one of those guys, if it's a really good back?
Oh, absolutely. If it's a cream-of-the-crop back, if it's a top one percenter, you know, a guy that's had production like Le'Veon Bell, a guy that's had production like Gurley and Ezekiel, absolutely, I'd use the first pick on him. Just ask the Giants how they feel about that. I mean, they used it on Saquon, and it wasn't the first pick, but it was right there, second or third, I believe, and I don't think they looked back for a second. Dallas, you know, spent the fifth pick on Ezekiel Elliott, and that team isn't even close to playoffs with Ezekiel Elliott. I think the question comes down to do you pay him on their second contract? I think that's a tougher one to answer. But if you're talking about a cream of the crop guy, a top 1 or 2% back, I absolutely use a top 5 pick on him.
Carson, I know you got to go. Can I ask you really quickly, what did you think of watching the entire Antonio Brown thing play out this week?
You know, it's just so shocking to me that you're hearing this about the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, drama and things happen in every locker room. And they don't always get out. Sometimes they get out and they're made public. But for drama to be made public coming out of the Pittsburgh Steelers organization just shocks me. You just don't hear of it. All you hear about the Pittsburgh Steelers is they win football games, they play good defense, the steel curtain, you know. But to hear them being talked about constantly, and you're not even talking about football. You're not even talking about wins and losses. You're talking about, you know, drama of a player and contract holdouts. And it's just so shocking to hear that it's coming out of Pittsburgh. But, you know, being a former NFC North player, I kind of love it.
Carson Palmer, 15 years in the NFL and appearing courtesy of FedEx Air and Ground NFL program. Carson, great to get caught up. Appreciate it very much.
Jim, great to talk to you. Thanks for having me on, man.
In an equally strong case for any of those four teams losing tomorrow, that's how evenly matched they are. Because it was not that long ago that it looked like none of those four teams would be playing tomorrow. But here we are. Here we freaking
here we
are.
Here the f*** we are.
And then you've got the Sunday combo that closes out with a brother v. brother battle in Philadelphia at Chicago. Chris Long and Kyle Long. Not only that, but Chris Long and Kyle Long on Howie Long's birthday. Could not script that any better or any more dramatically. It's got to be one of the proudest days of Howie's life and one of the most excruciating. But as good as those three are, those three games, and they are good. The game of the weekend is Sunday, 105 Eastern on CBS, Chargers, Ravens. And yeah, I said it. I'm not just saying it to be a company guy. I'm saying it. In fact, I would be saying it if it was being shown on public access. It's that good. A Chargers team that was so close to having the best record in the conference and home field throughout now has to go on the road and face a Ravens team that was so close to missing the playoffs altogether. A rematch from 2 weeks back. You think the Chargers might be looking for payback. You think former Charger Eric Weddle wants to win that game very much. There are two teams that like to talk a little smack during the games. We know that. Ravens D coordinator Wink Martindale told the Baltimore Sun that Philip Rivers likes to bump his gums. He just does it in a different way. Quote, "It's hard to go back and forth with him when he doesn't cuss. Dadgummit. I mean, ooh, Phil, you got me there. But I love the guy. I love the competitor." End quote. That's what Martindale said. A dadgummit blast. Filthy. I hope they've got the dump button and the delay prime for that game. Check out this personal smack from Ravens linebacker Matthew Judon when the teams met up on December 22nd. Quote, "I just asked him for a couple of restaurants I could go to. I might go back to Cali in the offseason. If anybody knows, he would know, especially with a big family. He's got to eat everywhere." End quote. Oh, he went there. Come on, man. There is a line that you do not cross, and you just did, bro. Leave family dining smack out of this, Matt. Add that to the list of reasons to go. But you know it's not going to be determined by that, not by these filthy comments. It's going to be decided by two monster defenses, two electric offenses. Notice I said two electric offenses. Now, you know, Phil Rivers and the Chargers have the juice on offense. But don't tell me that Lamar Jackson and the Ravens don't as well. Yeah, I know they can run it down your throat. I know they probably even run him too much. But there's more to it than that. The guy can do more than just beat you with his legs. But a lot of you still don't see it. A lot of you don't want to see it. A lot of you do not understand how dangerous Lamar Jackson and the Ravens offense is. And I, for one, I don't understand that. I cannot understand why people do not get this guy. Check this tweet out last night from @_BirdDaniel. To put Lamar Jackson's college career in perspective, @BennySnell ran for 3,873 yards and 48 TDs in his @UK football career. Both school records. @LJ_ERA8. Ran for 4,132 yards and 50 touchdowns in less starts for @UofL football as a QB on 82 less attempts. It's an amazing point. To which Louisville wide receiver Jalen Smith replied, "He also threw for 9,000 plus yards and 70 touchdowns in 2.5 years. To which Lamar Jackson responded to that with two hush emojis. You know, like, "Hey, man, don't tell anybody." See, this is the thing. For some reason, some people are still sleeping on Lamar Jackson. And I don't get that. I know he didn't go to the biggest program in the country. Maybe you didn't see him in college. You know, when he was a Heisman Trophy winner as a sophomore, the youngest winner ever. Somehow, maybe you missed that. Maybe you didn't tune in to the Ravens earlier this season when they were circling the drain. And then he took over. Maybe you didn't see him transform not only that offense, but their defense, really the entire organization. Maybe you didn't see him save the head coach's job. Maybe you haven't seen them average 230 yards on the ground since he was named a starter. Maybe you haven't seen how they become a much more physical, much more dangerous team since this guy took over. I don't know. Maybe you haven't seen how the Ravens' offense holds onto the ball for so long and dominates the time of possession, and it makes their defense so much fresher. Maybe you have not seen how the fan base has been completely transformed in a matter of weeks. I don't know. Maybe you think this guy's only a running quarterback, which means you didn't see that perfect pass that he threw to Mark Andrews against the Chargers. Maybe you have not seen me on the NFL Today banging the drum for Lamar Jackson. Maybe you haven't seen any of that at all. Probably, because that's the only reason that I can come up with that you'd still be sleeping on Lamar Jackson. So maybe Sunday is the first time you're going to watch this guy. If you have not been watching, you're missing a really different dude and player. A special kind of player. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm going to guarantee they're going to win. Far from it. If anybody is built to go on the road and win in a hostile environment, it is the Chargers. Yeah, I said it. Now, you would never say that about them in the past, but the Chargers came from behind to beat Pittsburgh on the road. The Chargers beat Kansas City on the road. The Chargers are dominant, potentially, on both sides of the ball, and they've got a toughness under Anthony Lynn that they have not had in the past. And yes, it's going to be Lamar Jackson's first playoff game, which is a whole different beast. Who knows how he's going to handle that pressure? But it says here, he's going to be fine. He's going to handle it well. I can't guarantee anything this weekend, but I can guarantee I will be locked in for Chargers-Ravens, the game of the weekend. And let me say this one last time. It may not be sustainable, but I don't think this is the kind of player or quarterback that he's going to be for his entire career. This guy's the freaking deal. Lamar Jackson is the real freaking deal. This guy is a stud.
Jackson.
Lamar.
Jackson.
Robert Klemko makes his first appearance of 2019. Good to have you, Robert. How are you?
I'm doing well. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Great to have you back. Listen, some really good matchups this weekend, but it seems to me you'd be pretty hard-pressed to find a more interesting one than L.A. at Baltimore. And for all the focus on Lamar Jackson, which is justified, what do you make of how the Ravens' defense has played this season?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of an underrated storyline just because they've had the first-round rookie quarterback who has done so well. But they finished the number one in defense in yards, number two in points, and they don't really have a stud edge rusher that you would expect a defense of that caliber to have. Nobody has more than 8.5 sacks on that defense. And what they've done is streamline the communication so that Eric Weddle runs a really complicated zone blitz scheme and can change things according to tempo and motion and all that. And in a lot of ways, they're ahead of most defenses in the NFL in responding to some of the newer offensive trends we're seeing.
You know, you've got a great piece up where you chronicle that and you talk about it on SI.com. And you get into the defense and you talk about Eric Weddle, like you just did right there, and what he means to the defense. In fact, D coordinator Wink Martindale told you that Weddle has that Magic Johnson point guard ability to put everybody in the right spot. So how much do they trust him, and what does Martindale mean by that?
Yeah. You know, it's amazing. You think about the Ravens' history. They go from Ed Reed, who, you know, was a finalist for the Hall of Fame. I think that was announced today or yesterday, to Eric Weddle, who, you know, if he keeps playing at this level for a few more years, which is, you know, hard to say, 33 years old, but he could be in that conversation. He's a different kind of player. He's not that free-range center fielder. He's more of an in-the-system kind of guy who manages everybody else on the field. And what they've been able to do is hand him a lot of responsibilities that most players in the NFL are not capable of. So they got together this offseason and they said, look, we've got all this different verbiage for our base defense that's been so successful here for a decade. We need to simplify this so that we can actually talk about it in real time. And Eric Weddle was a big part of that process.
Not only that, but Tony Jefferson told me that Weddle being in Baltimore was a big reason why he's there as well. So if you go back to your other point, Robert Klemko, my guest, your other point that they don't have that dominant edge rusher. Fact of the matter is they led the league in fewest yards allowed. They were second in points, but they don't get a lot of pressure with just a four-man rush. And they were 22nd in the league in turnovers. So exactly how are they doing what they're doing defensively?
Yeah, you know, they run a cover three zone blitz. And essentially what that is they'll have corners and safeties and linebackers coming off the edge. And then everybody else is in zone coverage that begins to look like man when they start picking receivers up. And it's something that a lot of teams have abandoned in the NFL because you have all this pre-snap motion that is on, on first and second down that most teams are doing. You have teams that are utilizing tempo. And so a lot of defenses have simplified, whereas the Ravens have only gotten more multiple and more complicated. So they end up getting pressure and getting sacks from a lot of different contributors as opposed to, an Aaron Donald or a J.J. Watt who's coming off the edge or coming up the middle and is good for two or three pressures or hurries a game, a couple hits and a sack. They don't have that guy. Terrell Suggs isn't that guy anymore. So they had to find a way to get pressure and manufacture it in a unique way.
We're talking to Robert Klemko. How about one thought about Lamar Jackson? I think I couldn't love this guy anymore. I think he's electric. I think he's turned the offense around. I think that on some level he's helped turn the defense around. I think he's got that fan base going. I love this guy, and I think that he's not the one-dimensional player that he's made out to be. I understand they're run heavy right now, and he's dangerous that way. I understand that it's not sustainable. What do you think they do with him going forward? Do you think they change the scheme up? Do they ask different things of him? What's it going to look like with him going forward running that offense?
Yeah, you see a lot of people talk about how this isn't sustainable and how this is not going to work and it's not a long-term plan. I don't think Lamar Jackson or the Ravens are pretending that he's going to be this player in 3 years. I mean, we could be looking at, Michael Vick, in the early stages of his reformation with Andy Reid, where he was becoming a pocket quarterback and still relying on his feet a little bit. But then he really came into his own a couple years after, being released from prison. I think that we could be looking at pre-2012, 2013 Michael Vick in the sense that as Lamar learns more and more about the game and comes to expect certain things from defenses and he sees all these different schemes, that he relies less on his feet. Now, that said, we're in the playoffs, and what he knows how to do is win games with his feet. And he can throw the football, but I would expect them to use him in the running game even more as it becomes a do-or-die playoff situation.
Postseason's great. It's wide open this year. Robert Klemko is my guest. Let me ask you about the Raiders. You and I have talked about this in the past, but you went to Raider games as a fan, as a kid. I've got to ask, what was it like for you then to see the Raiders' final game of the season this year and most likely their final home game in Oakland?
Yeah, it was sad. My grandmother went to the first Oakland Raiders game in 1960, and she raised the whole family as big fans. And, you become less of a dedicated fan once you cover the league, but I still have a lot of great memories in that stadium. She would bring us out there to watch games. And I just remember, I think it was 2000 or playoffs against Miami, and the Raiders really were just killing them. I think they won 21-0, 28-0, something like that. And there are very few. The one thing that's unique about Oakland is that there are very few fans willing to wear the other team's gear in the stands. But there were these two Dolphins fans in the stands, and somebody whipped out a carnival-sized dolphin toy, one of those plush toys, and then somebody else pulled out a knife. This is pre-9/11, right? Pulls out a knife in the stadium, guts this toy dolphin, and all these little styrofoam balls cascade down on these Dolphins fans. And then they left right there. Of course, they get a bad reputation because there are fights and all that, especially when they play the 49ers. But it's a pretty cool atmosphere. And I'm sorry that the NFL is going to lose that and replace it with something that's ultimately going to be pretty touristy, like a San Diego or a Miami, where if you're a fan of an opposing team, you're going to take your expendable income and come to the game they're going to play in Las Vegas. And these Raiders are not going to have a home game, a true home game, for a long time.
Robert Klemko joining us. It's a point that's really well made. I don't think they will either. What do you make, Robert, of what's gone down in Pittsburgh with Antonio Brown over the past couple of weeks?
Yeah, you know, I think that there's a lot of friction in that organization, and a lot of it stems from the coach's relationship with Ben Roethlisberger. And, you know, we wrote a story earlier in the season about the Seahawks and Russell Wilson and how Pete Carroll lost favor with a lot of the veteran players there because they felt like he catered to Russell Wilson and coddled Russell Wilson. Well, that's the reality of the modern NFL. If you're a head coach in the NFL, your most valuable asset by far is going to be your quarterback. That's the way the rules change the game. And that's the way the rules change the locker room dynamic too. So it's hard to fault a head coach for deferring to a quarterback. But when that happens, you're going to rub some people the wrong way. And I think that's what happened with Antonio Brown. Now, I go back to late November when Ben Roethlisberger made the public comments criticizing Antonio Brown's route running, criticizing the offensive coordinator's play calling, and all of these people leapt to Ben Roethlisberger's defense. And I think a lot of players in the league think that only happens for quarterbacks, and that builds up resentment. So I think at the heart of this whole thing is Ben Roethlisberger and how he's handled within that organization.
You know, I wonder, we know the numbers, we know the jewelry, we know the rings, but like historically, where does that put him? And I bring this up because you had a piece a few weeks back after Cameron Jordan made the argument that Roethlisberger was not a top five quarterback of this era. Lay it out for me, and what did you make of Jordan's comments?
You know, I kind of agree with Cameron Jordan, and I think he was, you know, maybe overly flippant. Obviously, Roethlisberger is a tremendous player. But I'm not putting Ben Roethlisberger in the top five QBs that he's played with in the last 10, 15 years. I think that they've had tremendous teams built around him. They've always been consistent contenders. But when you think about Ben Roethlisberger in the playoffs, the lasting image in my mind is Tom Brady sending him home or Peyton Manning sending him home. And I think he's a great player. I think he's a very unique player in the sense that, you know, he can stand in the pocket and shake off rushers and look downfield and make big throws. I think he's certainly a Hall of Famer. That's going to happen, you know, whether or not he deserves it or not. But I just don't feel like he's top five.
Listen, before you go, the coaching carousel is something I want to ask you about quickly. It's been pretty fascinating. There's a report this week that Hugh Jackson would be interviewing for the Bengals head coaching job. What's your reaction to that, and how do you think that interview would go?
You know, it's bizarre to me that anybody is talking to Hugh Jackson, and you knew it would be Cincinnati or Minnesota because he's got those personal ties in those places. But he left Cleveland, and I have not, in my short time covering the league and learning about the history of the league, ever heard of a coach throwing so many people under the bus on his way out. And it's like nothing was Hugh Jackson's fault. Right, with what happened in Cleveland. The offense was taken away from him, and he was a figurehead. Okay, well, then why did you stay? I don't understand how he gets these opportunities over and over again, but he's such a great politician and so great at building relationships around the NFL that's what happens. Retreads like him get new opportunities, and a lot of these younger guys who deserve them and who could do well with them end up having to wait longer than they probably should for offensive coordinator gigs, for head coaching gigs, and all that.
All right, so finally, what about a thought about what's going on in Denver? Vance Joseph is let go there. How much of the struggles in Denver are a reflection of the job that he did? And then how much of that is a reflection of the front office, and in particular, John Elway?
Yeah, you know, I think that John Elway deserves criticism for his draft classes. And I know that this last one is being heralded as one of the best in the NFL, and I think deservedly so. But it doesn't include a quarterback. And he's had several shots of picking a quarterback. Can't find one, says he's looking for that it factor that he had as a player and can't identify it. So you give Vance Joseph, Case Keenum, Brock Osweiler, and Trevor Siemian for 2 years, and you're upset when the defense falls behind because the offense is three and out every drive, and the passing game doesn't work, and you go through coordinators, and you stick with these two veteran receivers who are okay, but you don't really draft replacements for them until this season in Cortland Sutton. And I think that, you know, Vance deserves a lot of criticism for some of his decision-making in games, some of the clock management stuff, you know, kicking the field goal down 4 points against the Browns late in the fourth quarter was a big one. And I think that he's one of those guys that's going to clean that stuff up, and when he gets another head coaching opportunity, really do well with it. But, you know, like we talked about at the beginning, it's all about that quarterback-coach relationship. And if you find the right guy, you stick with him. And the Broncos were never able to find that, and that's nowhere near Vance Joseph's fault.
He's one of the best. He covers the NFL for Sports Illustrated. Good friend of the program, Robert Klemko, my guest. Robert, I'm going to look for you in Atlanta. It's Super Bowl. Great to have you back. Thank you very much.
Can't wait. Have a good one.
We've had that conversation. We've had it on this show, and we've had it legitimately and intelligently many times, most notably with Arian Foster and Ice Cube. Now, TMZ recently ran down Daryl Strawberry. One of their paparazzi ran up on him at the airport, as they do, and Straw took a very hard line on the issue of athletes using weed for pain.
Most people don't understand marijuana is a drug, and beginning, starting people off when they're young, and then leads to everything else. So most young people start off with marijuana. I started marijuana when I was young, 14, 15 years old, and led me to everything else. And
as far as athletes go, you hear the outcry, right, that they say, this is better, though.
That's man-made excuses, you know, what's better. Anything that alters your mind will change your mind forever.
I mean, that's really strong. That's a really, really strong statement from an athlete. So to Straw, weed is a drug. Not only a drug, but a gateway drug. Straw said it. Weed led to everything else that I did. And he's speaking from personal experience and issues with addiction. You remember, this guy was suspended 3 different times for cocaine during his baseball career. Straw told Dr. Oz back in 2017 that he was so out of control at one point that he was actually having sex between innings.
You actually, in the middle of games, were so addicted to sex that you would actually go out and have sex in between innings.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy, you know. All addictions has to do with behavior. If I never change the behavior, I can never get well from it. And we could stay in the addiction as long as we want to. And middle of games, yeah, I would go between innings and stuff like that and run back and, you know, have a little party going on. And, you know, I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, that's just the addiction, the drive.
But your teammates, the coaches, did they not know?
Well, some of them covered for me. It was pretty cool.
So you can go any number of ways with that. In fact, I could play that soundbite for you, and knowing you clones the way I know you clones, you could have takes and reactions to that for days. Days. Yeah, that was pretty cool. I mean, I could sit here and say, yeah, I know. I'm addicted to sex. Everybody I know is addicted to sex. It's sex. But his point is, that's nothing to make light of. It's an addiction. If the guy is having sex at work, he's addicted. It's not one of those things of, well, why'd he do that? The same reason anybody can do anything, because he can. Well, he did it because he was addicted. If this guy couldn't get through a 9-inning game without hitting it, he was addicted, obviously. So that's how out of control he was. And Straw's point was, all of this started by me burning blunts as a teenager. So Straw has seen some things. Straw has done some things. And that's why you can agree with his take or not. You got to at least listen and respect it, because he's speaking from a place of experience. Now, not everybody was so happy to hear that. Former NBA champ, noted ganj advocate Steven Jackson heard Straw's take, and he sure as hell did not respect what he was hearing.
Man, Daryl Strawberry, you got to be stopped. Weed is a gateway drug. Bro, you a whole coke head out here. You skipped that whole class, dog. You ain't even try to roll you up nothing to see. You went straight to the boy, all right? Second, weed heads and cocaine, people do coke. We don't even hang around. We don't even want to be around each other. I don't even know what that feel like. I ain't never experienced that. So you are not the person to be talking about marijuana. You a whole coke head out here, bro. Listening to you talk about weed and asking you for advice about weed is like asking somebody that went broke on how to stay rich. You a whole coke head out here, bro. Come on, man. Y'all got to stop letting these cameras run up on y'all in the airport and just blurting our stuff, dog. You a whole coke head out here. You losing your job because you want to snort coke. Man, ain't nobody listening to you, bro. Stop it.
Wow. That is incredible. That is mind-blowing. Nothing but respect for Steven Jackson. Man, he's always going to let you know exactly how it is. Quote, you a whole cokehead out here, bro.
You a whole cokehead out here, bro.
You a whole cokehead out here, bro. Is an incredible line. And again, let me tell you about Straw as a player. Coming up, Straw was the natural. You would not believe this guy's God-given talents. Crazy freaking physical gifts. A phenom. One of the greatest I've ever seen. An incredible talent. Period. But Jackson clapping back with, quote, "You a whole cokehead out here, brah," is amazing. All that was missing from that was a Daryl De La Dummy blast.
Oscar De La Dummy, cokehead, nutball.
All right, now that aside, back to Straw for a minute. My man's been to hell and back. My man has been to hell and back several times. He's got some crazy demons. And now he's made it his life's work to fight them back. You know, Steven Jackson said, you can't let these guys just run up on you like that and just start spitting this all out. I mean, Straw's actually working this, making this his life's work right now to tell a story and help other people. He's turned his life around. He's a pastor. He uses that story to inspire and caution others about the pitfalls of addiction. And that update worked its way back to Steven Jackson. And I give Jackson credit for turning the camera phone back on once again and making note of that in short order, which is exactly what he did.
What up, world? Say, I took that last post down to Darryl Strawberry because I see he a preacher now. That's eating guy. He's trying to get his life right or whatever, so I don't want to disrespect him or his family or his kids. So I apologize for that. But I feel the same way about that. There's no way in the world my stance don't change. I'm showing respect, but I feel the same damn way. If you think weed is a gateway drug, then you weak-minded. So, say it's a gateway drug for weak-minded people. I don't hang around weak-minded people, okay? So I wouldn't know that smoking the joint would make you want to go try crack. That's crazy, dog. There's no way you can make me believe that. I'm sorry. There's no way. It's a gateway for weak-minded people. And that's just what it is. So if you weak-minded, don't smoke weed because it's going to make you try coke and crack. Y'all have a good night, man.
Pretty interesting, right? So he's like, oh, it's a gateway drug. It's a gateway for weak-minded people. That smoking the blunt never made me want to smoke the crack. And Daryl Strawberry said, yeah, but I'm telling you from my personal experience, this is how it went. I started by smoking pot, and this is where I ended up. So that's interesting. Steven Jackson apologized for making it so personal and said that he took down that post because he did not want to insult or disrespect Straw or his family. However, it didn't change his bottom line. It did not change the way that he felt. He said he's sorry he went in on a dude who's worked so hard to clean up his act and who's trying so hard to help other people. So where do you come out on that? You know, I'm going to be honest and say that's not where I live, but I kind of see both sides of this. I'm not coming at it from a professional point of view. I can't sit here and say whether or not it is or is not a gateway drug. For Straw, it was. Clearly, it was. He said so. He's lived that life. Steven Jackson said, yeah, well, I'm living the life too. I lived that same life, but I didn't end up there. Because for me, it's not a gateway. I didn't smoke the blunt and then reach for the crack or the coke. He goes, I don't get that at all. He goes, those two people don't hang out together. So, you've got Jackson, who's a hardcore advocate for the health benefits of Tree. Straw, who's working his own program, trying to help people avoid the mistakes that he made. And it comes from a place of experience. So I can kind of see both sides here. I've got no problem with Steven Jackson saying, no, man, that's not right. They're legalizing the drug. The drug can be used for pain management. It's way better than some of the other things these teams and team doctors are giving us to get right. And Daryl Strawberry is saying, look at my life. Look at my career. Look at what I threw away. I was having sex during games between innings. It all started with the blunt. I don't know. Bottom line. I mean, this is America, right? Maybe big enough and free enough for different takes on weed. Best part is you live in a part of the world where you can make up your own damn mind about that. How you feel about that. Straw feels one way. Jack feels another. So from where I'm sitting, Straw can certainly keep on preaching. Jackson can keep on advocating. And by the way, neither one of those guys are going to stop doing what they're doing. Did Steven Jackson sound like he was coming off his point? Quote, you a whole cokehead out here, brah.
You a whole cokehead out here, brah.
Is harsh. That is a tough line, man. Especially for a guy who has turned it around and beat back those demons and lost a lot in the process and is trying to help people out. I like Straw. I've always liked Straw. Straw was an amazing player. But he, like Doc Gooden, man, had those demons. And Steven Jackson, here's where the point of contention comes in. All right, nobody disputes that Straw had those demons. Where do they come from? Obviously, Straw would say pot. It was a gateway. It led to all these things. And Steven Jackson would say, oh, hell no. It's not where that's from. That's you being weak-minded. A gateway to weak-mindedness. Hey, where I come out, I hate to be that guy who comes out in the middle. I never want to be that guy. I always want to have a take for you. I never want to straddle, but I'm kind of in the middle here. I'm kind of in the middle here. No harm, no foul, to each their own. If it's legal where you are, smoke if you want to smoke. Don't smoke if you don't want to smoke. And you've got a couple of people who've got both sides of that. We can actually have a conversation about that if you want, responsibly, if you can do it. But that was something different. Steven Jackson going in. And I don't mean on just some egg on Twitter. I mean on Straw. Daryl Strawberry potentially would have been. Had he not had those demons, he would have gone down as an all-time great. Tom Haberstroh is my guest. Tom, happy New Year. Nice to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing great. Tom, let me start you off with James Harden and the fact that he went 44, 10, and 15 last night, including the game winner in OT in Oakland. It's his second straight triple-double with 40-plus points, his fifth straight 40-plus point game. He's making it all seem pretty normal, but is this in any way normal at all?
I mean, it's not. Jim, I kind of did a double take when I saw this stat. I looked at his final season in OKC. You know, he was on Team USA that year. He won the Sixth Man of the Year that year. He averaged 16.8 points per game. This year in Houston, he's averaging double that, 33.6. I mean, he was really good that year. I don't think we've ever seen a player win an award, a league-wide award, for, you know, being good or being on Team USA, and then double his scoring average. And it doesn't even speak to what he's doing in the last, you know, 10 games where he's averaging over 40 points. It's absurd. And it's something different. It's not just the same old basketball. He's just taking more shots. It's the kind of shots that he's taking. It's the step back three, which is just about unguardable. It really is. You know, there's Jonathan Jarks, at The Ringer, he wrote a great story today and likened it to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's skyhook because it is unguardable. You're just creating so much space, and with that step back, you can't close out, and he's got super long arms, and his ability to hit from long range. I think we're at the start of something here. I don't think this is like a flash in the pan. I think players are going to look at what James Harden is doing and going to try to incorporate it into their own games. I think he's been that good lately that he's going to start a trend in the league with step-back three-pointers because he is just so dominant right now. It's unguardable, and it's amazing to watch. The Houston Rockets were left for dead just a couple weeks ago when Chris Paul got hurt, and they've won six straight games since the Chris Paul injury and done it over really, really good opponents, just like last night in the Warriors.
Tom Haberstroh joining us, NBC Sports NBA Insider. Now, I agree. I think it's a great comparison. It is like the skyhook. It's unguardable. Now, what about Golden State? If you're Golden State, are you at all concerned about how this season is going, or is it simply a matter of making it through the regular season in one piece and getting to the postseason?
Right now, it looks like a perfect storm of just nerves, of anxiety over there. It just seems everyone's antsy. No one wants to step on each other's toes or go over the line. I mean, it seems like the fact that Klay Thompson's free agency is looming, Kevin Durant's free agency is looming, you know, Steph Curry was out for a while, and DeMarcus Cousins is lurking, you know, trying to make it back. I think this is a lot more concern here for Golden State than just like this is the normal stuff that you see from championship returnees. Like, I don't think this is normal stuff. I think they're cracking right now. And I think I'm not going to say they're going to miss the playoffs or they're going to lose in the first round of the playoffs, but they need to figure some stuff out. From hearing what people are in Golden State right now, things are a little bit worse than what seems to be on the surface in the locker room and behind closed doors. It just seems a lot of, you know, not everyone seems to be on the same page. The fun and the joy that Steve Kerr always talks about that you have to play basketball with joy, share the ball, get everyone involved. It just doesn't seem like everyone's on the same page right now, just jumping all over each other. And the KD Draymond thing, I don't think was something you just swipe, sweep under the rug. I think there are some underlying issues there that they haven't completely solved.
Do you think they will?
I think they're the odds on favorite to actually, win the title still, because I know Houston has been really good lately. I just don't know if they're good enough defensively to keep this going and to actually be a title contender. And that's the thing, Jim, is if there was any other team out there that was, on pace to win 60 games or looked like they didn't have any potholes, I would say, yeah, I think this is perhaps something they cannot fix because there is that X team. A couple years ago it was the San Antonio Spurs with Kawhi Leonard, 67 wins, or 60-plus wins. That would have been a team that could take down this team. But right now it's hard to see the Lakers. LeBron is hurt right now. He's going to be out for another week. It's hard to see which team is going to be able to take advantage of what seems to be a little bit of a chemistry issue, with the free agencies looming and the fact that, Boogie Cousins hasn't come back. So I think there's just a lot of issues right now. And if there was a really good team that had championship medal, I would say, yeah, this is not going to be their year. But the fact of the matter is, I just don't see who else is going to take them down, given how much talent is on that roster.
Tom Haverstraw is joining us. Tom, you mentioned LeBron. He's been out since injuring his groin on Christmas Day. The Lakers seem to be doing a pretty decent job of limiting his minutes per game, but when you look at the pace of play, and how concerned would you be about the wear and tear on LeBron going forward, and how do you think they manage that?
Yeah, I'm concerned about it because it's something that is kind of hidden, is the fact that, he's averaging a career low in minutes heading into that groin injury, and I think a lot of people just assume that means that he doesn't have a high workload this season. That couldn't be further from the truth. If you look at the average possessions that the Lakers play, it's about 7 possessions more than the 7 seconds or less Suns in 2004 and 2005.
Wow.
It is so much faster than what LeBron James is used to. The pace factor, which is just simply your possessions per 48 minutes. In his career, his team's average 94, and this Lakers team is at 105. So it's just a lot more wear and tear on him, and it requires a lot more rest for him. The only issue is he doesn't have another guy to shoulder that burden. He doesn't have a Kyrie Irving. He doesn't have a Dwayne Wade in his prime or a Chris Bosh in his prime to shoulder that burden. In L.A., it's him and then a bunch of young guys. And so I think he just has to shoulder a lot more of the burden, and that's just a little alarming to me, is that at this age and how many miles he has, he's averaging the fastest, most demanding pace of his career, and he's not able to shoulder the load with someone else.
Tom Haverstraw joining us once again. And Tom, you and I have talked in the past about NBA phone addiction, and you recently had J.J. Redick on your podcast, and he talked to you about how he's dealt with his phone and social media. What did he tell you?
Well, it's funny. I just saw, Jim, that Mitch Trubisky just gave up social media because of mental health. He just felt like it wasn't healthy for him to be on social media anymore. And J.J. Redick did this in August, where he just felt like it was a time suck. It just felt like he was warped. He had this false sense of reality and felt like things said on the internet, stayed with him longer. So in August, he gave up social media, deleted his Twitter accounts, his Instagram accounts, and we talked about it on the podcast about, not just now, but in the future, what kind of impression this makes on kids growing up is, us constantly being on our cell phones and just having this, distraction, constantly knowing where your phone is and wondering what people are saying about you. It's not healthy. And at J.J. Redick, we talked for 45 minutes about this topic and just in general what team chemistry is like with cell phones. When a guy gets traded, Jim, do you delete him out of the group chat? Do you have this teammate that you just, hey, I know you've been on the team group text for a while, but we're gonna have to send you on your way, and you delete him. And we talked about that and the fact that the 76ers players are on Slack, which is amazing to me. Like, I never considered that NBA players would be slacking with each other, doing the workplace texting. So it just a lot of interesting insights into what it's like to be an NBA player in the technology era, the social media era. And he's certainly thriving without the social media. He's averaging a career high 18 points per game in his age 34 season.
God, it's so funny. It's funny, but not funny. I mean, ironic and weird, Tom. I can remember when we first all jumped on Twitter, and I can remember even friends and colleagues and peers that I had in this business where, I mean, it's a really different thing, right? When you see somebody who's a high-volume shooter on social, I remember the first couple of times, and this was before there was a mute, which is the greatest thing ever, I hate to say, but I remember having to unfollow a couple of, quote, friends, and it did not go well. They did not take it well. And that's going back about 10 years or so, but can you remember that time as well where it started to kind of color the way you thought about something, somebody you thought you knew, and then it would color their response and the way they saw you if you had the audacity to unfollow them?
Yeah, and not only that, Jim, that's a great point, but not only that, the whole fact that, you know, retweets, the currency of retweets and the currency of likes and the currency of followers has completely transformed what we think are smart or good takes or good opinions or even, like, what's worthy of tweeting out. You know, as someone who works in the media, I used to just, if I had a good stat, I would just tweet it out for free. And now I'm like, well, what does that really do for me? It might get my name out there, but it might not be good for my employer, and it might not be good for me in general is just giving away the milk for free instead of doing it in an article or anything like that. And J.J. Redick now has a podcast at The Ringer, the J.J. Redick podcast, and he felt like the only reason why he was on Twitter was just to promote that. And now he's just like, I can't even do that because it's just not worth going on Twitter and seeing what people say about me because it sticks in your head. And he's human. And it's really, it's good to hear because I think a lot of athletes feel like they can't admit that, you know, comments from the media or social media or Instagram really affect people. But it is a really interesting, insightful, candid interview where he really opens up about what it's like to hear a comment or hear criticism. And it does get at these players.
You bet. Tom Aberstroh joining us. Tom, back on December 26th, it marked the one-year anniversary of when your family started the ALS Pepper Challenge with your mother, Patty, as the inspiration, of course. It's become something very special. But for a sense of perspective, what was your goal when you first launched that? And what did you actually raise in that first year?
We didn't know what to expect. We just decided to eat peppers and post it on social media. Maybe a couple of our friends would donate, you know, a couple bucks here and there. So we set the goal of $30,000, and we ended up raising over $630,000. Mm. So we really had no idea what this would turn into. And once it got on, you know, it got on just about every sports program. A lot of my friends in the industry did it, and then it hit the whole Andy Cohen and Bravo, and it was just Entertainment Tonight. Like it was an amazing thing to watch. But you know, it just speaks that there is good in this world. And the flip side of social media, Jim, is just that sometimes you can turn the social media into a positive, turn a negative into a positive, and that's what I think what we did. And I just want to thank everyone who contributed, including you, Jim, for getting the message out there that ALS is not an incurable disease. It is just underfunded, and we're trying to do everything we can to end ALS, which is affecting too many people in this world. We need to find a cure.
And Tom, quickly, there's an update. In late November, the ALS Therapy Development Institute announced that the first participant was successfully given a dose of a new drug in the first clinical trial of the experimental treatment for ALS. So what does that news mean to you and to your family?
It doesn't happen without the Pepper Challenge. I mean, that's what ALS TDI told us, is that the ALS Pepper Challenge wasn't just a social media campaign. It actually put a drug into humans, raised enough money to put it over the edge. So just know that when people criticize these social media campaigns that it's just all for show and awareness and it's not really actually doing anything, couldn't be further from the truth. This is actually helping people, getting new drugs into the market, into human beings to help cure and have them live a long and fruitful life.
That's great. Tom Haberstroh, my guest, NBC Sports, NBA Insider. Tom, great to have you back. Always great to talk to you about all things basketball and things off the floor as well. Great to talk to you.
Jim, thanks. Every time I come on, it's always the best day, best moment of my day. Appreciate it.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Now. Can I get a deck of yeah to start the year off with? Welcome to the jungle, a tremendous 2019 to you.
How was the holiday season? How are you feeling about 2019?
A lot to recap when it comes to college football.
A ton to recap.
Yeah! Touchdown!
You see, the problem is not the college football
does not have an 8-team playoff.
The problem is the college football has a 2-team playoff.
Clemson holds.
There's Alabama, and there's Clemson, and then there's everybody else.
Pete Stammel is my guest.
I'm fairly confident that the two quarterbacks we'll see in this game on Monday night are going to be the number one pick in Tua. 2021 draft, I think Trevor Lawrence will be the number one.
And Ohio State has
this has always been a bucket list.
I mean, a guy in his prime, doing it at a very high level, but having to walk away because of physical issues, that would be really sad. Except he's not that guy.
I believe I will not coach again.
Does anybody anywhere really think that this guy's done coaching?
Certainly, yes.
It's fun, man. South Beach was a good time. No Crockett sightings, no tub sightings. However, South Beach lived up to all the hype. Yeah! I had a couple of shots of tequila in Boca. Like I don't like tequila at all. If I never had another shot of tequila for the rest of my life, it would still be too soon. Not a fan at all.
Hey, Tim, we about to do this big.
You had a Hall of Fame back. You've got a Hall of Fame quarterback. You've got seemingly the right coach in the right locker room. It was all set up, and that thing totally ripped apart. It's totally trashed.
Man, these killer bees, the only thing they have killed is the culture.
Swallow the money and move on. Drama from another prima donna.
Get rid of this cancer and get him out the door. Let's start over.
Email.
Ben Doubleburger is washed up. He's not. Burger. Austin Eckler joining us. How would you describe the physical and mental toughness of this Charger team?
I mean, it's like our team's always been the next man up.
If I see anything about Ray Ray's face, I'm holding the XR4TI count.
I'm Ray, and
the thread is dead. It's over.
I had my running shoes stolen off of a front porch rental in San Diego.
My man was in a singing competition, rocking a hippo mask. Gotta love the timing of that. Why do I think that was not a big coinky dink? He did not have a very good day. Dabo Sweeney is my guest. When you watch Tua, how do you go about slowing him down?
Processes everything. He's incredibly smart. He's crafty. You know, he will lie to you in a heartbeat. He's got guts. He's got a little bit of Brett Favre in him, a little bit of Michael Vick in him, and hopefully he'll make some bad decisions, but he hadn't made many.
I'm with you on South Beach. Great place, nice warm water, nightlife, unbelievable. Good choice. You could have done a hell of a lot worse than South Beach, Roman.
Bills legend Kyle Williams is my guest.
To know that I never held my teammates and my team back, to know that I went out giving them as good an effort and as solid a day as I had in any point in my career, all of those things equal cherry on top.
Never before.
They think was going to happen out there. Leave the animals out of it.
Please.
They're not there for the meet and greets.
Can live television get better than
those
that?
Guys enjoy that more than the game itself.
Oh!
An LA fan, come on, man. Have a little more class than booing dude, man.
Damien, happy new year. Great to have you on. How are you? Oh, Damian Lillard.
90-95% of the time, I try to be the guy to go the extra mile for somebody who I know is going to mean a lot to.
Who is the one guy who would?
Joe Smith. I was like, hey, man, can I get a picture? Can I get an autograph? He just looked at me, and he just turned his head. And my brother grabbed me. He was like, man, let's go. He garbage anyway.
Guard down to two. It's a three. Guard!
I'm going to keep on dropping 40 at will on everybody in everybody else's house. What I'm saying is this. The level this guy's playing at right now is unreal. Carson Palmer.
You're talking about drama of a player and contract holdout. It's just so shocking to hear that it's coming out of Pittsburgh. But being a former NFC North player, I kind of love it.
Wore Ray Liotta gluing his face to an angle grinder and prepping my car for paint.
Boy, Rex, I really thought you were going to turn over a new leaf.
I've been living down in Huntington Beach with a couple dancers anyway. So
what kind of dancers? Ballet, tap, modern?
Yeah, they're actually professional tap dancers around me. Real sharp gig of Mr. Bojangles.
Twitter! Hey, Jim, will you have half a take on Bobbitt for Monday? More Super Dave's last stunt of diving headfirst into a casket.
I asked the room if that was funny.
Prancing around in a pair of purple size 3.5 Nikes in a Chicago Bulls one seemed to be right up your alley, you big-headed midget.
How can a guy who calls the Goo Goo Dolls his favorite band be that angry?
You a whole cokehead out here.
Best moment of my day.
And I broke my driver the last time I played golf.
Poor guy. Burger.
I appreciate you having me over the years.
Had me a hot toddy.
Oh!
Aren't you in California?
University.
Dadgummit.
Champion.
Can't wait.
New year, new us, do better.
Okay.
Bro.
Good night now! Good night now!